Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 409A, October the 5th, 1979. There's no music because the phonograph needle is broken, but I'm sure you won't mind that too much. The big news of the week, of course, is the visit of the Pope. By the time you get these tapes, he will be back in Rome, but rest assured he'll be traveling again. His next country will be a member of the Trilateral Group, is going to Japan. The PR job on this man was perfect. I knew when he was anointed Pope that he would be a media event. He's put in by a very synchronized, brilliant team. And when you saw him against the blue skies and the flowing white capes and the children and the nuns and that smiling face, it's marvelous. It mesmerized the people. And there's no analysis of where he came from or what he can do or what the Catholic Church did in the past. People are yearning for a symbol, and a symbol of peace. And to some people, peace means wiping out the Soviet Union so that we can all peacefully exploit each other without anybody standing in the way. To some, peace means never having to look at any of the minorities, separating them on one side of the fence, or not having labor union strikes and the airplanes and trains going on time. One man's peace is another man's slavery. The mentor behind this Pope, Pope Paul VI, this John Paul II was his protege, also knew the use of media. I have an article from my files going back to 1967, February the 17th, 1967, that Pope Paul VI installed a new transmitter into the Vatican to have the most powerful large rotating antenna in the world to strengthen his broadcast around the globe. This antenna was to be larger. It was surpassed Iran's outlet as the most powerful shortwave tower in the world to diffuse the message of Christ coming out of the Vatican radio. They broadcast 225 hours a week in 33 languages, and that was in 1967. Speaking of radio communications, there just was a convention in Geneva this last week described by the Associated Press. And it said, after a four-day political squabble between the rich and poor nations, Argentina was chosen yesterday as chairman of an international conference to reshape global radio communications for the rest of the century. Roberto Severini, Argentina's Secretary for Communications, will preside over the 10-week World Administrative Radio Conference and will replace the use of the entire radio spectrum from short waves to ultra-high frequencies used for defense transmissions. All this comes at a time when the United States is supposed to be investigating human rights and the missing of 10 to 20,000 people in Argentina. Not to get too far off the Vatican, but just this week also, I read that the Argentine government is joining the U.S. Navy in maneuvers. They were suspended for 2 years as a protest against the human rights policy, but their Argentine Navy commander, Armando Lambruschini, decided to take part and will work with the United States and our missile destroyer, Dewey. They've been working with them and other Latin American countries for 20 years, and they're back with annual Navy maneuvers with the United States military. I received some wonderful articles from a subscribers to the tape in New York, from the New York Post and the New York News about the Pope and the Vatican that I didn't have. It's wonderful to get these clippings from all over the country because our Western newspapers and even some of the ones from the East don't have these articles. There was one from the New York Daily News last week about a gentleman who works for John Paul II. The tape last week, we talked about the finances of the Vatican, and last fall I did that also. This is about a bishop, Paul C. Marcinkus, 57 years old, from Cicero, Illinois. He went to the Vatican in 1947 and began working for the Vatican as a Vatican civil servant. Now, in our chronology, I'll begin to update the years where I left off from 47 to the present. But those were the years where Richard Nixon went into Congress and Gerald Ford went into Congress, and the National Security Council was formed. That's what I call the beginning of the Nazification of America. And a man from Illinois went to the Vatican in 47. The Nazis had gone underground and were retrenching themselves around the world, and he became a bishop In 1969, Pope Paul VI made him a bishop, and he became head of the, what they call, described the newspaper as a super secretive Institute for Works of Religion, which is the official name of the Vatican Bank. Those were the important years in 69 to 79 when Michele Sindona, the missing financier who hasn't showed up for trial, was meeting with Pope Paul VI and was to remove a minimum of $45 million from Vatican money for other investment around the world. And this gentleman was head of the religious institute, the super secretive money. It's interesting that the Pope went to the United States and talked about materialism. He was alongside this Paul Marcinkus, who has three jobs. He holds down three jobs for the Vatican. He's 6'3", 225 pounds, and they call him the gorilla, Il Gorilla, according to the New York Daily News. He's the advance man that sets up the trips. He's the head of the funding and the money and the missing money, and he's the bodyguard for the Pope at the same time. The New York News said that some insiders thought that his role in the Vatican dealings with Michele Sindona in the early 70s might have harmed his career in the church, and Sindona is now missing. They noticed that he was sent for because they want him in jail for Italy for a $225 million fraud, and of course there's the $45 million missing from the bank in the United States. But then the article goes on to say that Marcinkus personally was not burned too badly by all of this financial shenanigans, and that he, when John Paul II was elected Pope, he not only 17 days later relieved the group in Pennsylvania of their shenanigans and investigations for that 20 or more million dollars, but Mr. The gorilla, El Gorilla Marcinkus, was bouncing back as big as ever into the arms of John Paul II, so that the chain of command of 20 or 60 or 90 million dollars of the Vatican money missing, which I'm afraid can go into rightist organizations and Nazi organizations that began in 1945 and 47, this gentleman is not in bad standing with the Pope. You'd think he would be, but he's his bodyguard. Another article about this same gentleman from the New York Post that was sent to me gives a little more biography about him, not only coming from Illinois and going to the Vatican in 1947, but he was the former banker, or diplomat rather, to Brazil from the Vatican and to Canada. And then he lived in La Paz, Bolivia, in Ottawa, Canada. Well, a good section of the Nazis that were given passports by Montini when he was the Secretary of the Vatican went down to Brazil. One of those gentlemen is trying to be extradited now. There was an article in the newspaper again this last week. U.S. lawmakers are trying to get Gustav Franz Wagner out of Brazil. He went down there working for the Volkswagen Corporation, and I've mentioned him several times. He was seen at the birthday party for Adolf Hitler a year ago, April, and they're trying to get him back for trial. This gang from the Vatican helped them get down there, and this gentleman was a diplomat to Brazil. It's also interesting that he worked in Ottawa, Canada, because the Center for the Overthrow of Governments for the past 20 years, according to the Torbett document, and the funding for the assassination teams all over the world, what came from Italy, Rome, Italy, and also up in Montreal, Canada. And this representative for the Vatican was in Brazil, Canada, and La Paz, Bolivia. He, as the El Gorilla, travels with the Pope and is in good standing. And while they have this happy smile and wave at people and kiss these mentally retarded people and go through their little images, there is a story behind the role of the Vatican, fascism, the Spanish Civil War, the ascendancy of Adolf Hitler and Mussolini. And if you don't follow it now, the future could be just as bloody. I sincerely believe that. I also reached in my files on the Vatican for March the 20th, 1979. I had an article I hadn't put on the tapes for you. This is just preceding the fall. The trial of Michele Sindona was to take place this last September. But they've been working on that in New York City. The Franklin National Bank collapse in 1974 was to be investigated a long time ago. And for 2 years, they were working on the investigation of this case. And there was a judge, Thomas C. Platt, Jr., handling the case. There were 60,000 pages of court transcripts he had gone through. And March of this last year, he resigned from the job. He disqualified himself. The excuse that Judge Thomas Platt gave for not handling the Franklin Bank, the Sedona case, the Franklin National Bank Sedona case, was that at Halloween the year before, he had made a joke either about the Pope or Sedona, and they said that that's why he disqualified himself. This was an expensive disqualification because the Franklin Bank had put 2 years of investigations in, the judge was there, and by delaying and by his stepping down, it has cost the court over $1 million to the lawyers and their clients. But the actual reason that he disqualified himself, it broke, and then he admitted, wasn't the Halloween joke at all, but that the son of Judge Thomas C. Platt, Jr., a Cornell Law student from Cornell Law School, took a job in a law firm for an accountant office named Ernest & Ernest, who are auditors for the Franklin National Bank. Those are the people that are prosecuting Sedona. Sedona skipped town without going to trial. But the very judge who is to investigate this case caused a two-year delay, $1 million or more in the delay, and it was put off because he stepped down. His son went to work for the firm that was auditing the Franklin National Bank. I don't know whether this is common or uncommon, but it really got to me or bothered me knowing the background of this Pope, and that was last May the 27th when he named 26 new bishops from 14 nations. He selected a gentleman from Philadelphia, John O'Connor, and this gentleman was a rear admiral in the Navy, and he was to become the Navy's chief chaplain. So Mr. O'Connor was named a bishop in the Catholic Church, and now he will assist Cardinal Terence Cook, according to the Washington Post, in New York as a Roman Catholic military vicar of the U.S. Armed Forces. It seems a little funny that when this bishop, when they gather to elect the new pope or have a chain of command in the Vatican, that one of the bishops there is an admiral in the U.S. Navy. That, I don't know how you feel about that, but or how common it is, but it really bothers me. One more story about the Vatican before we get on to other stories. Again, last March, and I have a large file on the Vatican. I haven't used them all, but the missing money stories are always interesting. And last March 29th, 1979, in the Washington Post, was a story about NBC expense money missing. Senator Church's committee came out with a rough figure that 400 people in the news media are associated with the Central Intelligence Agency, but we couldn't get their names, obviously, or we would know that all the reporters and news writers giving us our information probably are from the CIA. But this article was about NBC probing the fact that they had $1 million missing in 10 years, and some of it was chalked up to expense accounts. And they cited one particular person, John Cox, 34 years old, a former employee of NBC's Washington Bureau. Cox went to the investiture of John Paul II in Rome with a briefcase of $38,000 in cash, and the cash was missing and never recovered. That was just part of the known $1 million fund. Well, if the NBC has agents or could have agents, they could chalk up as stolen money or missing money or account money. But I'm sure to get the media event that was achieved with this Pope, wherever he went, that there's a lot of money and a lot of planning, getting a lot of people out on the streets. And this missing money always interests me because how much of it is used in Rome, if there was hanky-panky with the first pope, if newspaper stories were covered, if stories were killed, what does it cost to keep the lid on some of the things that happened, say, to John Paul I? I don't know, but NBC alone, admittedly, lost $38,000 in cash when one of their radio TV men was covering the Pope's investiture, and why would he go with $38,000 in cash? The one thing that I know for sure is that Nazism never died. There's no such thing as a neo-Nazi, and there is a connecting link going all the way from point A to point whatever it takes to control the world, and it moves very swiftly. The New York Times had an article Wednesday, September 26, Paris Murder Arouses Fear of Right-Wing Violence. It's by Flora Lewis in Paris. It said there was a street murder of a 35-year-old leftist rider last week, and anti-Semitic groups were involved. His name is Pierre Goldman. And 2 days after Pierre Goldman was shot down by three unidentified youth, a bomb damaged an apartment in another part of Paris. But there was graffiti on the wall of this where a man lived, and it said, "We're killing Legend," L-E-G-A-N-D. The insult will find retribution. 24-2-75, signed SS. I'm sure meaning the Hitler SS troops. Jean Legend, according to this article, was part of the French resistance movement, and when Otto Skorzeny, the former SS colonel, was leaving Paris on a television station, this outrageous Nazi war criminal was leaving. It was 1975, and he was interviewed about a book he wrote about his war activities. This Jean Legend cracked a whip at Skorzeny as he was leaving the radio TV station, the Paris television station. And this is 1979, 4 years later, with a note, and they bombed his home. The article in the New York Times says there's an emergence of anti-Semitism of Nazis. It's linked to the Goldman murder, and they knew, and the police, again, like Nazi Germany, this goes into that book, Seymour Millman's book that I quote over and over again, the work of the 400 political assassinations in Germany and the justice system where the innocent are locked up and the guilty are free. The Paris police are not finding those people who are killing the Jews or the resistance movement, the people that are opposing Hitler. There was an article pointing out the fact and leaving a note that the police will not catch him because they work for him. An anonymous phone caller said that Mr. Goldman had been executed by a group called Honor to the Police, and they called note that the police there are not catching the people and that they have no intention of getting them and that they are soft on these assassins who are killing the left and the Jews in Paris. The police are doing the same thing in Long Island and in Connecticut with these crosses burning and homes bombed and so forth. Nobody is caught and nobody is tried. Anti-Semitism is the concern in Paris again. Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir are concerned about the murder of Mr. Goldman. And there is a growing Nazi movement and a link to the police departments, and the police are very overt in letting these terrorists escape and go. Another case took place in Chile this last week where the United States government pulled away their embassy because the people involved with the Letelier murder and the terrorists were released from the Chilean jails. They will not extradite those people to the United States for trial, and they're releasing the terrorists who are doing the killings there from the jail. The police officials are doing it in Chile, and Chile is now a Nazi country. The New York Times, just this Sunday the 16th, 1979, in the magazine section, has an article, Reviving the Myths of Holy Russia. Incidentally, if you get Time magazine or Life, you see the inserts of the beauty and glories of the Tsar and the Tsar's family in this angelic setting, selling vodka or whatever, going back. And this article has, in the New York Times, has a lot to say about anti-Semitism, about the Russians coming to the United States, Solzhenitsyn, the meeting in San Francisco that this author went to, where a teacher from a nearby language school, I'm sure that's this Army Presidio School down here in Monterey, that is full of white Russians and Nazis, not neo-Nazis. And the New York Times article goes into the meeting of the Russians that are coming to this country and how they want to get back into Russia and how Russia inside is moving to the right. And they keep referring to the revolution in 1917 and what went wrong. And they blame the Jews. And the discussion is the Jews and the glorification of the Tsar and the days of the Tsar. And again, this virulent anti-Semitism coming out of the Russians that have been brought here by Mr. Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger to the United States, as well as Henry Kissinger overthrowing Allende's government and putting in the Nazis in Chile. One of the biggest cover stories, as big as mind control and atomic bomb, is the changing of people's names and making them appear as Jews to escalate the Nazi phenomena. Well, you can read the New York Times article, and it compares the discussion of the blaming of the revolution to the days in France when Pétain was blaming the Jews for what went on in France at the time of the German occupation, the Jew is the scapegoat because the Jew had such a hard life with the pogroms, and the Soviet government was put in partly by a lot of Jewish strategists. Karl Marx was one of them, who believed that they had to overthrow the Tsar and the monarchy in order for people to get education and freedom to employ themselves and health plans and so forth, and freedom from terror from the pogroms that took place under the Tsar. Well, these people are meeting all over the United States in pockets, planning to get Russia back. They want, not talking about the oil and the minerals in Siberia and the wealth that will be theirs if they can take it back. So the New York Times is worrying about the resurgence Nazis in Paris and in France. The New York Times in another section is printing what is going on in the United States with the plans of these Russians and their intent if they take over again. That's why I say don't take the Pope lightly, because his antenna and links go directly into all these areas. I received an article from the Oregonian. It was copied from the Washington Star. If you get the Washington Star, August 28, 1978, and it has to do with spying in America and in Europe. The article says that the new Carter plan for spying, the Intelligence Charter Bill, S-2525, that was offered last year, is being revised and will surface very shortly. It has to do with intelligence and surveillance of Americans at home and abroad. And the frightening thing about this new Carter plan is that Americans can be spied upon, not if they're suspected of being criminals, not if they have ties to espionage, but if they have something in their mind that the government wants, it gives them the right to take it from them, from their head or their mind, or to bug them. The new charter that Carter is putting in for intelligence, the counterproposal to the original one set up last year, would allow Americans to be bugged and be on surveillance to obtain information. Now, that is something awfully new, to target just the information. The intelligence officials insist, this article says, that they can target information and not the person. The fact that the information is in the possession of a person is almost incidental. And this is a direct quotation from this plan. The whole point is to get the information. You don't care who has it. The person is not being investigated. We don't focus on the individual, only the nature of his information. For example, if somebody knows about an oil deal in the Middle East, you don't care if that person is a spy or a suspect or organized crime or whatever. You want to know what is happening to the oil. He can be targeted for surveillance. If you want to know about gold or the money changing in the world, if you have information, you can be targeted for surveillance. The whole purpose is to survey you. If you know something and they want to know it, and it's for national interest, not necessarily national security, there will be a foreign intelligence, 7-member foreign intelligence surveillance court, and the intelligence community can go to them and say, we think this person has information and we want to know it. Now, what if they want to know who was behind the assassinations or what May Brussels is doing, and will it endanger our national security if certain information is revealed? It would be legal to target me or anybody else for surveillance if they want to know what I know. Now, that saves them a lot of figuring out and a lot of expense, because individual citizens can put things together and then they can take it. There were scientists in Carmel Valley that came up with a certain radio system, and the government put a stop that they couldn't use this particular system because it would interfere with what they were doing, and the men had worked very hard on that. This is like reading your minds, electronically taking hold of what you are doing and interpreting whether or not other people need to know it, if it's for their security. This, I'm going to read you what the administration officials said last week about this charter for intrusion into our positive lives. The officials said, in quotes, intrusive surveillance techniques could be used on Americans not suspected of criminal activity. Intelligence officials says they're interested in obtaining positive foreign intelligence. information about the capabilities or the intentions or activities or organizations or persons, including economic information that would help this country. Intelligence officials insist that they can target the information, not the person. The fact that such information is in the possession of a person is almost incidental. The whole point is to get the information, said one government lawyer. You don't care who has it. The person is not being investigated. We don't focus on the individual, but on the information and the nature of the information. Members of the Senate said that what they call positive foreign intelligence is the naughtiest problem in the charter. The question is, how far can U.S. intelligence agencies extract information from an American who has not done anything wrong, has not violated any law, is not working for a foreign power, and yet has possessed information that the U.S. government desperately wants? Now, the Senate has claimed that mid-September, this past September, was the date for introducing this charter proposal to Congress, but that the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty might put it off. But keep your eyes open for this charter and articles, and send me from wherever you are whatever you have on this subject, and we'll ponder it a little bit. The FCC is also going through, the Federal Communications Commission is going through a change, and they're changing a lot of the rules on radio. And I think about the Argentine position with the shortwave radios and the Vatican radio towers, and we know what the media does in this country and around the world. They want to change the requirements of radio stations. They used to have a minimum amount of local news that they had to carry for the various people, and there's a suggestion of letting that go and letting the radio stations just decide what they want. They want to eliminate all limits on the amount of commercials that can be on the radio, and no limits on the amount of news or public affairs broadcasts that must be provided by radio stations. When I was on KLRB for 7 years, it was part of the public affairs requirement that they have a certain amount of news time, and I was glad to do that, and they also carry local and national news on that station, the FM stations. But if they eliminate the responsibility for local news and use just canned news, it saves hiring newscasters, and people don't come in, and then you get this blanket coverage all over the world with just one or two or three voices telling you what's going on in the world. Also, if the limitation is off on commercials and news, politicians with the most money can buy the most time, and there's also a suggestion of doing away with any limits on equal time, which, of course, puts the poor people and their candidates and representatives down to nil. There will be no chance of really getting on, because the large amount of money that's given to campaigns is saved for the last few days, and those people are put on television, and then when they go to the polls to vote, it's those faces that they vote for and the voices that they hear. So the changing, or what they call the easing of regulation of radio, will be a big difference. Also, there's a radio station here, a classical musical radio station, that was bought over by a church group out of Cincinnati. There's a lot of Christian stations coming up that are totally religious, and this was blocked by a lawsuit and several parties that you can't buy a station and totally change it to another person, but you have to keep a format similar to the one they had, because this was the only classical music station on the entire peninsula. That was blocked temporarily, but if you ease all regulations of radio, you could have every radio station religious and every commercial, churches and government interests, and whoever has the money will push it. And right now the FCC, in what they call easing the regulation of radio, is making it ripe for one more step towards fascism. Each week I seem to be talking about stepping stones or the noose getting tighter or tighter. But that's my interpretation, and that's what I see, and that's what I think is the result of all these political assassinations that I've seen, is to make another war, get us into that Third World War, and control people. And I see control at every angle. I wish our news was happier. On the other side of this tape, we'll go into more control. But that's what I see in the news, and that's what I share with you. And if it's dismal and if it gets too bad, that's just the way I see it, and if there's a break, I'd also share that with you.